This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to Enterprise. My name is Audrey Raj. So here's the deal. By 2025, Generation Y will represent 75% of the global workforce. These millennials are the future leaders of our organizations, and this is something to look forward to as the Gen Y, you know them, they're different. They bring some radically useful skills to the workplace as they are more tech-savvy, they're more efficient, diverse, and are very research-oriented. But these millennials are also said to be lazy, selfish, needing instant gratification. Some say they're pampered and have very little respect for authority. So how do we excite these millennials and motivate these future leaders to be the best they can be and not just Ferraris stuck in a garage? Joining us this morning via Skype to answer these questions and more are two gentlemen from Singapore with plenty of anecdotes and case studies to share on how you can be the mechanic that unleashes these Ferraris onto the world.
I'm Sentil. I'm the Director of Consulting for Harbinger Singapore in Malaysia. I've been with Harbinger now for, this is my 14th year. I've been given an opportunity to share this body of work in about 17 countries so far. And I love running, I love traveling, and my work helps me do what I'm passionate about.
Yeah. Okay, so my name is Go Ashok. I'm looking after One Synergy Global in two areas. One is with Dan Ping's body of work around Drive, and the other is around change management. I love what I'm doing because we get to help a lot of organizations implement our ideas. Do I have kids? I'm not sure if you can call them kids because they are 24 and 20, so they're millennials, and they are in my face all the time.
All right, so let's kick this, get this conversation started with just the term that you just mentioned, millennials. How do you solve a problem like millennials? Why is it that it's such a buzzword? Why is it that sometimes it's got a negative connotation? What's going on here?
It's very interesting, right, Audrey? You know, if you think about it, every generation, right, they always compare themselves with the next generation, the younger generation. Say, oh, you're not like me, you know, we had it different, you know. It's always like that. But now in the last 30, 40, 50 years, right, what has happened is, you know, we've got people started to categorize the different generations. You've got the baby boomers, you've got Gen X, you've got the millennials, right? So it's only a recent phenomenon where people have started to categorize generations, you know. And then right now it's the millennials who are the latest generation, right? So, and we have a term for them. And I would say that's why there's a lot of buzz and noise around millennials. But this challenge we speak about is a timeless challenge that every generation has been talking about.
And over the years, we've heard it said before, kids these days. But now it's just millennials. So it's down to the fact that they've been labeled, is it?
Yeah, it's a label that is uniquely given to a generation. And before that, they never labeled them like that. They said, you youngsters, right? Now it's millennials. So then after the millennials will label the next generation something else, you know, right? And it just moves on. So what has happened is, instead of saying you youngsters, we're now giving labels to a generation. And it's going to go on and on with the next generation, you know? So, but that's all it is. It's just a label for a group of people who are different from the previous generations in certain areas of, you know, the way they conduct themselves, the way they live their life, the way they think and conceive of ideas, right? And that's all it is. It is just a new group of people being introduced and exposed to different sets of things.
Central, as much as you're saying about the labels, I've also noticed there are now very interesting labels. The latest one I heard is Strawberry Generation.
And what is the Strawberry Generation?
They say they are soft on the inside, you know.
Very rough on the outside.
But very soft on the inside. So the labels have taken new flavors and imageries along the way. But the sad part about these labels, that what we are noticing is, there are certain perceptions about their behaviors and their expectations. And that's what we are seeing as a major issue, because yes, they have labels, but around these labels, there are perceptions around how they should be and how they should not be. And when I have a perception of someone, the way I'll behave with them is already different.
True. And some of these perceptions, let's just talk about some of the words that are being used to describe millennials. Lazy, selfish, needing instant gratification, pampered, not respecting authority, and even being job jumpers. So that we're coming closer towards the workplace setting. And and of course, you know, one of the issues that most Gen Y, baby boomers, Gen X employers have with millennials is that they feel like it's difficult to get these millennials engaged at the workplace. So why are millennials often disengaged? Or is this just a matter of perception?
Okay. A lot of times I get this comment, it's so difficult to manage the Gen Y, so the millennials. And I tell them that is where the problem is, because Gen Ys do not want to be managed. They want to be led. And that's what they're looking for, because they are like Ferraris, you know. They've got a lot of talent with them. There's a lot of creativity with them. They're highly networked. They come to the workforce with a lot of talents that we never had when we came into the workforce. So they are Ferraris just stuck in a garage. And we are the mechanics who can actually tune them and guide them and let them just ride down the road. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to put them in little boxes and tell them how they should be, but not identifying their real, real potential. And that's one of the reasons why they're not engaged, because they're not inspired by the leadership within the organizations, you know, because they're being micromanaged, and that's the last thing they want to do. Because I've not come across, forget it, well, even Gen-wise, but I don't think any one of us wake up in the morning, rush and say, I want to be managed today, I want to be micromanaged today. You know? I doubt that happens, but with the Gen Ys, that's even more stark. You know, they do not want to be micromanaged at all, and in a way, they feel that they don't fit in because they're not too sure why the organization functions, why they have to do a couple of things. You know, there's not enough authentic conversations that come around. And there's not enough freedom.
Yeah, just to add to that, Ashok, you know, you think about it, right? When we were growing up, you know, we had the newspapers, we had radios, we had, you know, the books to get information from, you know. But now they have this thing called a phone, a mobile smartphone, which is connected to the knowledge in the world that exists in the world, right? So they have almost instantaneous access to a body of knowledge that we did not have access when we were young, you know. So when leaders are engaging millennials, right, they're forgetting the fact that they have instantaneous access to the wisdom that is existing in the world. And they are constantly comparing, why are we doing this? It doesn't make sense. This is not what I'm hearing and reading, you know, and you know, all the knowledge out there doesn't make this right. But why is the leader telling me to do it like that, right? So we are forgetting the fact that they've got knowledge in their fingertips, you know. And we need to engage that wisdom. And a lot of leaders are not doing that enough. And therefore, you know, it's leading to, you know, a situation where the millennials feel disengaged. They feel disillusioned, you know. They don't feel like, you know they are doing things meaningfully. You know? And that's a problem.
Ashok, coming back to your point about millennials not wanting to be micromanaged, do you feel like in the previous generations, like baby boomers and Generation X, they were more open to being micromanaged and supervised at a close level?
Now, I don't know whether they were open to it, but the circumstances were where they were forced into it. Okay, let me give you an example. When I joined the workforce back in the 80s, when I asked a question of my managers those days, for some reason or the other, they were all big fans of Nike. Because they used to tell me, don't ask questions, just do it.
Just do it, right, okay.
Just do it. It was just like, just do it. And in fact, the perception or the concept was, if I ask you to jump, do not ask why, just say how high.
Right. You
know? So I'm not too sure whether we were very open to it, but that was the circumstances where we were. That was the only way of working. That was the only way of working at that point of time.
And there's no way today saying just do it is going to fly with the new generation. There's no way, because they're going to want to know why. Even I would want to know why. Why do I have to do this?
Absolutely. We need to go back in history to understand why it has been so. So here I'm just going to touch on Daniel Pink's book and some of the principles it's talked about, and I can elaborate why in the past we were all just do it kind of culture. In Daniel Pink's book, which he wrote in 2009, which has become a big bestseller up to today, he talks about a couple of things. He talks about the evolution of motivation. One of the first points he talks about is, yes, we have gone through what we call the biological motivation or the biological drive. He says, this is just to put food on the table and make sure there's a roof over the head. You know, we just survive, you know. And as we grew and as we started doing commerce with tribes, there was a need to respond to carrot and sticks, or what we call reward and punishment. Mm. And if we go a little deeper into this, in which he calls motivation 2.0, it dates back to the time when we were moving from an agricultural age to an industrial age. See, what happened was you needed the factories to be filled up. And how did you fill up these factories? It was with farmers, artisans, housewives. And at that point of time, back in 1911, there was this gentleman called Frederick Winslow Taylor. He wrote a book called Principles of Scientific Management, where they were even looking at factories. They had a clipboard and a stopwatch and just looking at how fast and how slow people were working. And one of the thinkings behind that was, if I wanted to make sure that people work well, produce enough goods, I've got to incentivize them.
Hmm.
If I wanted to make sure they did not make mistakes or limit the mistakes, I have to punish them. So I'm just condensing it into carrot and stick. Now, that thinking has permeated over the years, over the 100 years, into what we call management techniques. Mm. And if you really think about it, management is an invention. It's not natural. It's not like the tree. It's more like a television, right?
Mm.
So it is invented, but the assumptions that went behind that was not of a outward mindset, which Sintel will talk about, but it's more of an inward mindset. It is about treating people as just machines. And those days, it was just about, just do it, don't ask questions. So management was invented with one end in mind, to make sure I can control you and make sure you comply. That was it. It is not about personal development. It's not about treating the people as people. And that had permeated. Maybe it was fine those days. Maybe perhaps it worked well. But Audrey, like what you mentioned for the Gen Ys, no way. No way. They need more than just the just-do-it attitude.
When we come back, we talk about what organizations and managers can do to provide meaningful employment to millennials. Enterprise will be right back in a few. This is BFM 89.9.
Bankers, financiers, and moneymakers. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Enterprise with me, Audrey Raj. We're talking about millennials today and how organizations can provide meaningful employment to these Gen Y workers and ensure they don't become Ferraris stuck in a garage. Joining us via Skype from the Arbinger Institute, we have its Director of Consulting, Sendhil SSG, and from One Synergy Global, its Director and Principal Consultant for Drive, Go Ashok Menon. So, what in an ideal world would millennials want in the workplace?
Just think about it, right? If you think about what is disengaging them, it automatically tells us what we need to be engaging them with, you know? And one of the first things is, you know, they need to be trusted. They need autonomy. They need to have creative freedom.
Freedom.
Yes.
Freedom. That's the key word.
Yeah, creative freedom. You cannot tell them, I want you to do it like this and let me tell you how to do it. Okay? step one, step two. That means they don't have an opportunity to use their brain. They don't like that. They just want to know, tell me what the outcome is that you're trying to achieve. I'll figure it out for you. That's the first one. The second one is, you remember in Facebook or, you know, in all the social media, right? If you make a point, you get almost instantaneous replies from others, your friends and your community, right?
Yep.
So they are a generation that are used to frequent and continuous feedback. But in a typical corporate setting, right? And fortunately, a lot of companies are moving away from this. You know, feedback is only given once a year.
Yes, during your annual review.
Exactly, right? And that is very disconcerting for this generation. They don't like that. You know, they've grown up with almost instantaneous feedback coming their way. They want to know how they're doing. They want to know how to improve themselves. The third one is they want to engage with authentic leaders. They don't want people to, you know, just show their, you know, mask great leadership strategies and, you know, behaviors. They want to really deal with authenticity, you know. They want to be led, like Ashok said, not managed. Another one is contrary to what a lot of people think about millennials, right? Because you're on the phone all the time. They really treasure deeper relationships. They really treasure that. And they don't like to be governed by structures as much. They prefer relationships. You know, they really want to be part of a team, you know, and they value that. And they want to work with people who value them, you know. And lastly, right, you know what? They love having fun while working. It's not all serious. They want to make sure they've integrated a quality of life into the way they work. It is not just about serious work. They want to do the work in a way that is fun and enjoyable. They want to be innovating while producing results, for example.
And all the millennials or the Gen Ys that I'm speaking with, this is what I'm getting from them. You know, I need my creative freedom. And surprisingly, I'm also hearing from quite a number of them said, it's not about the money. Yes, they do recognize that money is important, but that's not their only sole purpose. You know, the language that they're using is totally different nowadays. In fact, they say, can I contribute? You know, I want to be part of a purposeful organization, you know. So their language is totally different. And they're also asking for more freedom to be able to be creative, you know. And they're too stifled with structures.
Yeah. Beautiful point, Ashok. In fact, Audrey, think about it, right? Today's generation, they are not afraid of taking short-term jobs, you know. Short-term stints, you know. Oh, I don't mind. This is a six-month job. I'm fine, you know. So they are getting comfortable with something that, you know, we were not comfortable. We wanted a job that, you know, we can stay on for the longest time. But the new generation, they're starting to demonstrate that they're comfortable with short-term gigs. You know, it's okay for them, you know. I'm not saying everybody, but you can see that happen, you know, when you talk to some of these people. No, it's only 6 months, but, you know, I just want to see how it is, you know. It's something I'm being curious about, and they want to give it a try, you know. And they're comfortable with that paradigm.
But I just want to state also one thing, Sintil. Some of the clients that I'm working with, these principles are not universal for all millennials. Because
absolutely.
I have some millennials, some of the leaders who are sharing with me, they are not ready for that freedom.
Right.
Some of them need the hand-holding still. But yet again, we just take it step by step, you know, and then lead them along. Some people just want it fully.
Right.
Some, they need the hand-holding. So we need to balance it. But majority, I'm noticing, is more creative.
So, gentlemen, how else do we engage millennials? You mentioned earlier giving them more creative freedom. Is there something that leaders and organizations are not paying sufficient attention to?
I always believe, right, a human being is a human being, you know. Technology can change, environment can change, ideas can change. But if you just, you know, go back to the basics, we are all human beings, you know. And therefore, it would be wise of leaders to leverage on timeless principles. One of the timeless principles is what governs us, right? We are in relationship. We are all connected. We impact each other. In Aurobindo, we call that mindset, you know. So we are either engaging people with an inward mindset or we are engaging people with an outward mindset.
Maybe right? You can define these mindsets for us.
Aurobindo's founder, Dr. Terry Warner, who was on your show, Audrey, you interviewed him 6 months ago, right?
Yes.
So, you know, his research showed that research shows that there are basically two mindsets that we operate from. And these mindsets dictate our experiences and also inform what behaviors will demonstrate in any given situation. Now, one is what we call the inward mindset. Now, in an inward mindset, the way I approach people around me, I'm totally self-focused. I'm only looking at, okay, how do I get them to do what I want them to do? You know, we call that an inward mindset, where I'm fixated in the value that they offer me, and therefore, they are all objects to me. So in that mindset, right, I'm going against the very grain that we are in relationship, you know. We are affecting each other. We are undermining and we are disrespecting the humanity of another person in the organization. Now, the other mindset is what you call the outward mindset. Now, in an outward mindset, I see others as people. And therefore, they matter to me. What they're doing in their lives, their objectives, their challenges, I'm interested in what they're doing. I'm concerned for them. And therefore, while I pursue my goals, I take into account how they might be impacted, how I might be impacting them. I'm not going to do other people's job, but I'm alive to the fact that whatever I do, I have an impact on others. So these are the two basic mindsets that we operate from, and it's timeless. We've always been like that, you know? And if we start leveraging on mindset and starting to say, okay, so if I'm having an inward mindset, I'm already set up for disengagement. But if I have an outward mindset, I've set myself up for engagement. So now how do I now strengthen my outward mindset? While a lot of leaders, they try to mask their intention, which we call mindset, what Arbinger has discovered is you can't mask it. It always comes through. You can never hide your mindset. People somehow know what mindset you're operating from. They may not have the language to explain it, but they just know you didn't mean what you just did. We call that mindset.
So obviously, if you want to work well with others, you're going to need to adopt an outward mindset. Are there outward mindset strategies that can help millennials feel more engaged and valued in the workplace?
Absolutely. You know, let me share with you a story. You know? We were working, Arbinger was working with a polyclinic group in Southeast Asia, you know, and the leader introduced the mindset principles that we need to see others as people. You know, we have to remember these things, right? And he started introducing it. And one of the issues they had was around critical lab test results. Now, a critical lab test result is when a patient comes to the polyclinic and goes for several tests. And the tests reveal that it's life-threatening. And the goal they had was whenever a patient receives a critical lab test result, let the patient know as soon as possible. Inform the patient as soon as possible about the critical lab test result. That was a goal. And everybody will think, that's a good goal, right? So you know what the process, right? You know what the process was? Call three times. If the patient doesn't pick up the call in after three times, mail out the letter before 5 o'clock. Although this goal is not a bad goal, right? But it led to a certain type of behavior which disconnected from with the reality of the people that were affected by this particular critical lab test result. So one day, the polyclinic received a call. Hello, is this this polyclinic? Yes. My name is so-and-so, and I'm the son of one of your patients, and I just want to inform you that he passed away 2 days ago. And we went to his house to, clear his stuff, and in his mailbox, we saw this letter. If we had seen the letter 2 days ago, we could have saved his life. The CEO and the leadership team met, and they discussed a simple question. You know, we just embarked on this journey to have an outward mindset, to see people as people. What does it mean to see our patients as people? And they started discussing. It was a half a day conversation. And at the end of the day, this is what they decided. If we are truly seeing our patients as people, our goal cannot be make sure the patient receives the medical report as soon as possible. It has to be make sure the patient receives medical attention within 24 or 48 hours, depending on the criticality of the result. So now just think about it. A millennial who wants to make a difference, you know, who wants to be meaningfully employed, who wants to go back thinking, you know what, I've done something today. In which way of defining a goal do you think he is going to find satisfaction? In the definition that make sure you send the report as soon as possible, or make sure the patient receives medical attention within 24 or 48 hours, right? So when we talk about shifting mindset, there are very clear strategies that leaders can adopt that would help systematically shift from an inward to an outward mindset.
The moment the leaders understand their impact and the importance of them adopting an outward mindset and seeing people as people, the next stage is also to understand what really inspires people. And again, if I'm to use your language, it is actually timeless principle. It is timeless principle because historically, the way we look at motivation, the assumption is a lot of us are motivated from an extrinsic point of view. And that by default thinking, it's all about money, you know, or carrot and sticks, like what I mentioned earlier. However, there's an even more powerful motivation that a lot of leaders may not be aware about, or sometimes they are aware, but they have not stretched it fully, which is called intrinsic motivation.
Mm-hmm.
All of us are driven intrinsically. But when we come to the workplace environment, does the environment allow these intrinsic motivations to flow? And what specifically are these intrinsic motivations? There are three areas that we always look into that all of us, right, are driven intrinsically. The first one is purpose. Do we have a very strong purpose, or do we understand, right, about the contributions that we make? Are we excited about the contribution that we are making for the organization itself? The other one is mastery. All of us like to make progress towards something meaningful. We like to learn. We like to develop. Right? Does the organization give us enough opportunities to be able to do that? And the other one is autonomy, which is a desire to be self-directed. We all love to be self-directed. Yeah? And these are very important intrinsic drivers that leaders need to be aware of and to be able to apply within the workplace. I've been working with this organization, and some of the issues that they were having is about customer complaints. So I was sitting with the CEO, the operations person, and two other senior leaders over there. And we were having a conversation around, okay, what inspires people and how do we implement this? So my question to them is, why do you think your staff is making a lot of mistakes? And the second question I asked is, how can we help them? So by default thinking, the first thing they mention is, oh, they are not engaged enough. You know, they're not excited about the company. All right, I hear you. And when I ask them, so what are you going to do to help them? They say, oh, we're going to come up with a 100-point system. If they make mistakes, we're going to cut out points away. And then we're going to send them for retraining. If they make further mistakes, then we're going to give them a warning letter.
Mm.
And if they make some more mistakes, we're going to have a lot more points deducted from them, and off they go. So you can see how it's an automatic thinking that punishment will drive people. Right. So that's one example. But in other organizations, that when I had conversations with leaders and all, I tell them, let's talk about what drives people from a purpose point of view. My question to most leaders are, if I'm to group all your people together, would they be able to tell me, articulate very clearly the purpose of their team, the purpose of their contribution, or even the purpose of the organization? And I remind them, I'm not talking about your mission and vision.
Mm.
So nobody will even remember that. I'm talking about your purpose. Do you know why you're doing what you are doing? And in many discussions I've had, even in workshops and all, I find it very surprising that they give me the usual KPIs and or the mission and reflection of mission and vision, but what they are writing does not inspire them. But when we go to the nuts and bolts of really understanding what inspires them, then I find that they are more creative, coming up with greater ideas, and even the way they look at their goals is totally different, right? And this is one of the first things that we always do is ensure that from the leadership right up to the last person on the team, they understand not only their purpose, but their purpose of their team. And that's when I see a lot of creative ideas that is flowing, where they're looking at what else can we do differently. And in some situation, in this other organization, there were some issues with two department heads. They could not get together. And one of the solutions we came up with was, could we get them to switch their roles right? Or at least the person who's complaining more, get him to be in the other department for for a while, maybe 2 weeks, to experience what they're going to. So you can see it's a bit of a mindset, plus that's a bit about experiencing their level of contribution, their purpose, you know? And what happened magically, right? Because he spent 2 weeks in this other department. He came back, he garnered his people together and ensured that there were no more resignations, because one of the biggest issues the CEO was facing was high level resignation from the other guy's team. You see? That stemmed from the fact that they suddenly understood why they're doing what they're doing. You know, we all tend to work in silos in organizations, but we forget that we are all together. We're all part of one big mechanism in that sense. We are all out there to serve society together.
So one of the things we'd like to invite leaders to do is really take a review of the way goals are set. Are they in any way, you know, enabling people to feel aligned to their own purpose in life? Whether they are in the finance or marketing or sales or, you know, whichever department, right? They all have a personal purpose. And how do we define the goal in a way where they are ensuring they're delivering on the outcomes the company delivers, requires, right? But at the same time, they feel very purposeful in doing it. And it is beautifully captured in the book, Drive, you know, that Ashok talks about. So I would recommend leaders to actually read the book Drive by Daniel Pink and the Outward Mindset book, which is filled with stories about how we can engage millennials and everybody else, you know, in a very, very meaningful way.
When we come back, I'm going to get Ashok and Sendhil to explain what their respective organizations do to inspire millennials in the workplace. We're going to put the duo on the spot. Enterprise will be right back after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Enterprise with me, Audrey Raj. Joining us via Skype are two gentlemen from Singapore, Director of Consulting at the Arbinger Institute, Sendhil SSG, and Director and Principal Consultant for Drive at One Synergy Global, Go Ashok Menon. We're talking about motivating and inspiring millennials at the workplace to ensure they don't become Ferraris stuck in a garage.
Okay, gentlemen, just to cap things off, we've heard about the kind of mindset we need to adopt in engaging these millennials, the kind of things you can do to help motivate them in the workplace. Can I just ask, I'm putting the both of you on the spot here, what does Arbinger and Drive do on a daily, monthly or yearly basis to engage millennials in your workplace?
Okay, maybe I'll start first. My team is, other than me, I think everybody else is a millennial. you know, one of the things that we do in our team, and we do it very rigorously and disciplinedly, is, you know, every month, right? Every month, every other month, we're actually having conversations with our staff. Are you enjoying what you're doing? Is there something that, you know, you don't enjoy doing? Is there something that we need to do, rescope the way you're thinking about? You know, and every 6 months we are engaging people and asking, listen, is there some passion you want to pursue? Is there something that you want to do? Is there a particular course you want to go and attend? It may not be a course that you want to attend related to your job, but you are passionate about it, you know? So we need to keep engaging them and asking whether they are finding the job meaningful. Is there a better way to do it? You know, we want to give them a lot of latitude to make sure they're making their own decisions, you know? And that is a very critical part of the way we run our team here. And, you know, I'm happy to say that most of our people are long-serving, you know, because they get to experience, doing what they want to do and yet, you know, doing things meaningfully for the company, you know. So, Ashok, anything to add to that?
Oh, yeah. For me, it's a conscious decision to ensure the language that I'm using, you know, talks a lot about intrinsic motivation and all. Because I learned from my past experiences, you know how when we have performance appraisal discussions, we are following a form and a set questions, you know. But I realized when I used to do that in the past, I used to put the form aside and talk to my staff and ask them about their family, about what inspires them. And I find that these are the type of conversations that has brought a lot of meaning, because I get to understand not only them as a person, but I get to understand what inspired them, what are the obstacles that they face, and how they even overcame that. And sometimes what happens is, in certain projects that we are doing, I'm able to bring this relationships or these past experiences back to remind them, reflect it back to them, and then inspire them. So to me, I'm very concerned, or I'm very, very interested in what drives a person. Having said that, there are times they have to do very algorithmic type of work, you know, mechanical type of work. I do acknowledge that it's not easy, it's not fun, but I do explain to them the rationale of this in a bigger picture. But having said all of this, have I slipped into mistakes of my own? I have. I remember a very clear example once. There was an important newspaper article that was in the papers in Singapore, and I was telling one of them, hey, you know, can you go and look up for this paper? I think it's around this period. It is by this person, and he's spoken about Daniel Pink's drive and all. Can you look for this paper, cut it out, photostat it, and then, you know, scan it, and then email to me? You know, so I was coming with my old way of how to do, what to do, you know. And then the next thing I know, after I put down the phone, within 3 minutes, I get a ping on my email and my WhatsApp, and the soft copies were there. You see, it dawned upon me, you know what? Do not tell millennials the what to do, break it down, you know. Tell them why you need it, why is this important, and leave it to them from a creative point of view to come back, you know. But yeah, sometimes I do slip back, but this becomes good reminders for me to have the conversation again with them and explain to them the mistakes I made, you know.
I think, Ashok, you hit something, you know, nobody's perfect, right? Yeah. So we all are going to slip. And the important thing is to see whether we are inching forward, you know, in little bites, you know. And another thing that came to my mind is actually flexibility, you know.
Flexibility.
Are we giving them enough flexibility, you know? They may say, hey, today I don't want to come so early, you know. And are we okay with that, you know? Or are we having rigid terms like, you know, you have to be here by this time, you have to work till here, you know? They don't like that, you know? So where possible, right, having flexibility around their working times, because you won't believe it, right? Some of these people, they'll be working at midnight for you. It's not, and they don't need to do that, right? But if they're finding it meaningful, you know, and you give them enough space, they will adjust the time, they will deliver. You have to trust them that they'll deliver, you know? And they'll do it in their own way. And it's very fun to watch them, you know, do that. You know, you are sleeping, but you're working because, you know, this is important. But at the same time, they say, Senthil, tomorrow I'm coming late. Yeah, fine, you know. And if you say, hey, tomorrow you can't come late because we've got this meeting, you know, and then they'll come. So they we need to make sure we're giving them enough flexibility so that they have control over their lives, and their lives are not controlled. And that's very important.
I've been speaking to Director of Consulting at the Arbinja Institute, Senthil SSG, and Director and Principal Consultant for Drive at One Synergy Global, Go Ashok Menon. To learn more about Drive, go check out the One Synergy Global website at www.onesynergyglobal.com. And to learn more about Arbinger's The Outward Mindset, the website to go to is arbinger.com. You could also check out our podcast on Arbinger's Mindset Theories. Just search for Arbinger on our website, bfm.my, or on the BFM mobile app, available now on the App Store and on Google Play. My name is Audrey Raj. Stay tuned for more enterprise goodness after the news bulletin at the top of the hour. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.